Hello, and welcome to the Inside EVs podcast for December the 25th, 2020. Merry Christmas. This is episode number 38. Today, we'll be talking about the electric vehicles that launched in 2020. I'm Dominic Ioni, Inside EVs editor and Inside EVs forum moderator. Joining us today, we have Tom Malogny, Inside EVs editor and host of the YouTube channel State of Charge with Tom Malogny, which has a strong focus on home charging stations. We also have Martin Lee with us from the EV News Daily podcast, which is, as you may know, available on all your usual podcast platforms. And of course, we have Kyle Connor from the Out of Spec Studios YouTube channels. He also puts together superb videos for the Inside EVs YouTube channel. Go subscribe and tap that bell icon for notifications. So welcome, gentlemen of the panel and ladies and gentlemen of the audience. We have a bunch of cars to talk about today. But before we get to them, let's just talk real quick about what we have charging up in our driveways. Let's start with you, Tom. I believe you have something a little bit special this week.
Yeah, so I got delivery of my 2021 Model 3. We talked about this on a few shows ago. I just kind of on a whim sold my 2019 and put in an order for the 2021. I wanted to check out the new one with the heat pump and some of the upgrades, be able to do some new content for Inside EVs. So I took delivery of it. It's actually white. It's a long range dual motor. I didn't get performance. I got it white with a white interior, and I immediately took it to get wrapped. I wrapped it in a 3M satin gray. It's not quite as bronze as it comes up in that picture. It's definitely satin gray, but it really works well with the 18-inch aero wheels. So we should be doing some videos and some reviews, some comparison reviews with the previous version and this coming up soon on Inside EVs.
Are you planning on doing anything to the seats to protect them? Like a ceramic kind of finish or something?
I actually got the wrap ceramic coated. And the company, you know, asked me if they wanted to do the interior, but I passed on it because my previous Model 3 had the white interior.
Okay.
And it was a year and a half old, and it was perfect. Awesome. So I don't think I need it.
Do you wear a lot of blue jeans?
I do all pretty much all the time, and there is some blue transfer, but it easily cleans off with like a Lysol wipe. So, you know, I didn't see the need to spend the money.
Sweet. Okay. Hey, Kyle, I understand you have something with the plug this week too. Maybe not.
Yeah. And to Tom's point about the white seats, no one treats them harder than we do Muddy Dogs jeans, and they clean up perfectly. Warm Dawn dish soap with a microfiber, that's the best way to clean those seats. And that way it doesn't remove the factory coating. Right. What we have in the driveway this week is the new RAV4 Prime. Now, I've done RAV4 Prime stuff before, but this is the XSE. It's the top spec one, and which you need to get the top spec one to get a 6.6 kilowatt onboard charger instead of a 3.3. And with a 15 kilowatt hour usable battery pack, I mean, it takes a while on the small one to charge up. So I did a range test in it yesterday. The video will come up soon. Incredible city range. I'm going to do the highway range test today. And it's been nice to drive around. I forgot how fast they were. They really are stupidly fast for a RAV4.
Hey, what was the temperature there yesterday?
It was 32 average. It was basically freezing.
So it wasn't warm. Okay.
Yeah, well, okay. I do some things to counteract that. I drive the cars around in the morning, then charge them back up to full, try and get things running. I precondition it, and then I run the climate control with the minimum, like just like 68 degrees on auto in its eco setting. But yeah, it's a cold weather city range test, and it did surprisingly well. I won't say the number, but the longest plug-in we've ever tested, plug-in hybrid.
All right.
And what's the crazy stat about the RAV4 Prime in terms of how quick it is in the Toyota lineup? I kind of forget now, but I read it once. Like it's the second fastest
only behind the Supra.
Right.
Yeah, it's like some dude pulled up next to me in a STI, Subaru WRX STI, like all hopped up with shot flames out the back, and I blew the doors off this guy. I didn't even know what happened. It was great.
Sorry. That's great. All right, so we got a bunch of cars to talk about. We're going to talk about the cars that debuted in 2020, like that began first deliveries. I think that's the metric I'm trying to stick with here. So it's kind of a an eclectic mix, and 2020 is a, you know, there was a fair amount of cars. 2020 itself was a plague of a year, and I'm sure most of us are pretty glad it's ending. But we did get some great cars, and so I have them listed up in here, and they're, I guess, not in any particular order. So let's just start off with what we got at the top and go through. And so, and the first one we have is the Ford Mustang Mach-E. Now, this, of course, is the, you know, probably the most highly anticipated car of the, well, maybe not of the bunch of them actually, but right up there with them among the most highly anticipated electric vehicles of the year. So, Tom, you have driven this, yes.
So, yeah, you know, you're not exaggerating by saying that it's the most highly anticipated. For a lot of people, right. It is. You know, maybe not for everyone, but this is a huge, huge vehicle for Ford. They put so much behind the Mach-E, and it's great to see a legacy OEM finally, or some of the brands, Volkswagen also, coming and really putting out their, putting their best foot forward. You know, we've seen compliance cars mostly for the last 10 years from the legacy brands. There's very few electric vehicles that the existing companies have put out were really their best effort. And I think the Mach-E is Ford's best effort. And as far as I'm concerned, I think they nailed it. I think it's a great vehicle. Is it perfect? It's not perfect. Kyle and I have been doing some talking about the DC fast charge rate. We haven't really fully formed our opinion yet, but I think we're both of the opinion that it probably could be a little bit better with DC fast charge. It could charge a little bit faster, but you know, that's not the end of the world. It charges up to 48 amps for home charging on level two, which is great. It drives great. The UI, the user interface, I think works really well. It feels great. You know, I think this is just going to really, really, really put Ford up at the top of brands for legacy OEMs, or right up near the top with Volkswagen for their efforts. This vehicle is going to do well. I think Ford's going to sell every one that they make so far. What do you think, Kyle?
I think not only just with legacy OEMs, I think with any electric offering, this is right up there with it. I think, first off, we've seen a pretty good, my videos, I guess I've done some driving dynamic stuff, and the driving dynamics are pretty good for a CUV. It's probably the best handling of the bunch. If you're an enthusiast who wants to drive an electric car, this is it. I will say Von Gittin Jr. did an awesome video with a Mach-E 4X, same version I drove, and where I was talking about the oversteer on power. He was able to demonstrate this on a skid pad, and you can see him actually full on drifting the all-wheel drive version. So there is a ton of Mustang DNA in here. You know, I've been super open that I'm okay with it being called a Mustang. I think it's a great addition to the family. I think the car itself is fantastic. Yeah, I agree with you on the charging curve, though. This is the biggest problem for me, and it's something that they're going to refine and update and massage over with over-the-air updates with time to come. But that charging curve is really a little bit, don't want to say bad, but it's borderline bad for me. So it definitely will increase the time at a DC charger if you're charging up to 80, especially 100%, because at 80%, it dips down to 12 kilowatts, 13 kilowatts. It's like, what are we even doing here? So I don't know. I think fantastic car. I don't know how well it'll road trip yet.
Can I say just one thing that neither of you guys have mentioned yet? Plug and charge. First one on the market. Watch, right. Go watch Tom's video. It's brilliant. I mean, I'll tell you how the video goes. Tom plugs the car in, it charges and builds it. But go watch the video because it's really good.
So Taycan 2021 has hit the streets by now, and that has plug and charge. And
great.
That's deliverable. So I think Taycan beat the Mustang to plug and charge.
Awesome. The more, you know, it's just the Tesla experience, right. in a third party in a different OEM experience. Turn up, plug it in, walk away. Exactly, it's how all EVs will be in the future.
The best. My dad was plugging in a Taycan yesterday, and he called me. He's like, I don't know how to activate the charger. I'm like, well, you just open the app and swipe. And he was swiping, but he wasn't swiping on the correct charger that he was pulled up next to. So he was activating another one. He didn't realize he had to look at the number of charger he was at. And he's on the phone with EA. And there's nothing dad! Wrong here. There's nothing wrong. Like, everything works. Just plug and charge would be nice.
But can I just... Doesn't it just like plug in and it just happens automatically? Everything just happens. He doesn't have to swipe anything.
Yes, that's the way it worked. He had a 2020 Taycan, not a 2021.
Ah, I hear you. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. So just one last point on that. For those who haven't been driving electric vehicles, you don't really understand how much of a pain in the ass, and I'll say ass, public charging has been. You have to carry multiple cards. You have to have cell phone apps. You need your credit card. And then when it doesn't work, you're not sure if you did something wrong or the charging station didn't work or if your car has some kind of communication problem. It's such a pain point. I own and manage public charging stations on a property in Montclair, and I have security cameras on it. I can't tell you how many times I've watched the videos of people just so frustrated because they didn't have the right card or they didn't swipe it right. They didn't activate it right. They didn't have the right connector. It just has been such a boondoggle that plug and charge is going to really just make public charging so much simpler. It's removing a huge pain point in electrification. So, okay, we can move on now, but thanks for bringing that up, Martin. Kyle and I should not have overlooked that.
Indeed. So really the big falling down point at it right now anyway is the charging, but it does have over the air updates. So it's possible that Ford can at least improve the charging profiles and other things, issues that might show up as it shows up in the hands of more owners, which I believe is just happening now. I'm not exactly sure. I mean, it's on our 2020 list, and I believe, yeah, I'm not sure if I've seen the first actual delivery yet, but I expect there will be one before the end of the year, which is like a week or whatever. But, all right. So we're really looking forward to seeing what else to do with this, because this is for Ford, it's a great electric vehicle. It's very product oriented. It's a special vehicle. It's not just a toaster on wheels, an appliance. It will be nice to see them do more with this platform, like give it to Lincoln and see what they can do with it. Maybe some little bit more different form factors on the same platform. It'd be great to see Ford leverage this for more than just like one or two vehicles. And there hasn't been a whole lot of noise about that. So that's something to look forward to next year. So let's move on. Next on the list is the FCA Fiat 500e. Now, this is not coming to the U.S., which is a shame, because I wasn't sure what to think about this thing at first, but it's really grown on me a lot. I still think I think I'd rather have this than the old one, although I really like the old Fiat 500e, which was just like a conversion from the gasoline Fiat 500. This was made to be electric, but it's still, I believe it's not super quick and doesn't have like a super long range, but it's still pretty good and it looks bad. What do you think, Martin? This is in your territory.
I'll give you WLTP range because, like you can say, it's no point doing EPA. 190 miles from a 42 kilowatt hour battery pack, 0 to 60 in about 9 seconds, about 90 miles an hour, 93 miles an hour top speed. As an around town, around city car for an occasional long run, this car is absolutely fine. The drop top, sort of open top version is absolutely beautiful of this. It's not a compliance car. It's not even built on the same platform. It looks the same. It looks the same as the Fiat 500, entirely new. FCA spent $700 million on their EV project so far, ground up, taking it super seriously. And you know what? For the right use case, fantastic car.
Right. I'm disappointed. Tom, would you look at this thing if it was coming to the US, or is this not enough range for you?
I'd probably go with the Mini Cooper SE if I were shopping between the two, to be honest with you. But I do find it interesting that they're offering it in the three different versions, the Cabrio, the hardtop, and then also with the coach door in the rear.
Oh, right.
So I think that that definitely was needed. I've actually sat in the back seat of a current Fiat 500e, and it's, it is not easy to get in and out of those things. Right. So, you know, having that access in the back makes a big difference. And having the second battery option that Martin mentioned makes a big difference. But, you know, I think FCA made a good decision not bringing it to the U.S., to be honest with you. I don't think that they'd move many of these here.
Kyle, you have any opinions about the 500E?
Yeah, well, you know, I'm a mini guy. Right. You can see my mini. Let me get my pointing right. Here we go. There they are. So, you know, I love minis. I've owned 6 of them. I think they're awesome. And so it feels a little sacrilege to go over to a 500E. Now, I liked the previous gen, but I liked the smart car more. And I like the i3 mm-hmm. more if we're talking old stuff as well, because they're all kind of about the same price. And the new one looks good, but it's like borderline. You're bridging the gap between a city range compromised EV like the Smart, like a Mini Cooper SE, even though that does have fast charging. And you're sort of going to like a maybe I can stretch this car and fit it into my lifestyle. This is not a car that you stretch into. This is a car that you're going to drive to the shops and back. You're not going to go, you know, across the UK in this thing, because that's just asking too much of this type of vehicle. So I think it could have been worse and cheaper, and it would have been better. But right. That's just my opinion.
All right. So let's move along to the next in the same category, actually, also not available in the US, and also a small coupe or a coupe like, I guess it's, I think it's actually got 4 doors, but the Honda E came out last year, and it is a beautiful, and like the man, if I had to choose between the 500E and the Honda E, oh, man, it's so, I mean, they're both really nice stylistically. I kind of have to give the Honda E a bit of an edge there just because the interior as well is so great. Martin, back across the pond again.
Again, in a much smaller WLTP range on this, 130 something miles yeah. official. But, you know, you're definitely going for style over anything else. As their first attempt at a really serious mainstream EV, you have to applaud Honda for doing this and being bold with the styling, being bold with the form factor, and, you know, being bold with the price. Very expensive car for that world that it's sitting in. So, you know, at the top, you're going to have the Honda E and the Fiat 500, and then you're going to come down a little bit, and you're going to like the Peugeot E208 and all those, and more of the French car, like the DS Crossback E-Tense thing, and then you go down a little bit, just a little bit cheaper, like the Renault Zoe and what have you, which is, again, loads of range for the money, all around 40 to 50 kilowatt hour batteries. So this is a really competitive segment now here in Europe. I wish more of these cars were available in the US. You know, I think it's that, you know, I have the wrong perception that the only cars you want in the US are, you know, road tripping cars. You know, it's kind of the cultural difference between us that do, you know, 400 miles because everyone's doing a road trip all the time. There are plenty of our listeners and viewers that are living in metropolitan areas that this car would be ideal for.
Right. So I guess, yeah, that they mentioned that the range isn't quite what the Fiat, that makes the equation so much more, it's still super challenging because now I'm leaning Fiat 500 because then I could take that, you know, I when I look at cars, even like short range cars, I think, can I get to the beach, which is like about 90, 100 miles from here? And if I can get that far, now there's some chargers along the way that I could stop if I needed to for 15 minutes to make up that extra little bit to get back. So anyway, yeah, that's just the lens that I look through when I look at these.
Reminding myself on the usable on this, 28.5 kilowatt hour usable. So you could argue far too small for 2021.
Yeah. Martin, quick question. I haven't been following the Honda too much because we're not getting in here. I love it. Yeah. Does it DC fast charge?
Yes. Yeah.
It does. Okay. Yes. CCS or CHAdeMO?
It's CCS, and it's that. It's the middle of the bonnet that you can see. It's just that big black panel that comes up, and it's straight into them. They've put it front and center of the car, really celebrating. And of course, you know, this car is about the tech. It's about the big widescreen that stretches pretty much the width of the car. Too far, by the way. If you're sitting in the driver's seat, it's a real reach. You know, for the driver, you've actually got to lean out of your seat to get to the other side of it. You shouldn't ever have to really. It's more for the passenger. You know, you can have the fish tank come up across that thing. It's full of technology. And you know, you can plug your controller, your PlayStation, whatever controller in, your Nintendo
That's
controller.
An important feature.
and have actually. A little play, you know, into the USB and play games on it. So, you know, really, really good technology in this car. But the one area. It is a very small car. It's got no story in it. And the one thing they could have gone bigger on was just that battery pack. But yeah, 35 gross and 28 usable is, I don't know, you've really only got to be in a major city to own this car. With charging at home.
Let's drop down our list just a little bit and just touch on the Mini Cooper SE, which is in the same category but is available in the US. And we actually have a bunch of owners on the Inside EVs forum. If you have any questions about the Mini Cooper SE, if you're curious about maybe buying one, drop by the forum. There's lots of information there already. Or if you have questions that you don't see answers to, you can reach out, and the community there is great. And yeah, it's in the Mini Cooper SE. It looks like a traditional Mini, basically, with the yellow highlights. And we've spoken briefly about it already. So, but Tom, anything else we should know about this thing?
Yeah, so I can attest that you can road trip in the Mini Cooper SE. I actually drove it from New Jersey down to Kyle in North Carolina to the track, so we could take this thing out on the track. So it was about a 1,000-mile round trip. Right. A little bit less than that, but using the Electrify America charging network. Now, it only can accept 50 kilowatts, but it takes that 50 kilowatts and holds it, you know, far up into your charging, so that while it only accepts 50 kilowatts, even though it has this small battery, I really didn't have to hang out too long at each charging station, as you might think. So the 1,000-mile round trip really was not that painful. I know most people are, you know, we've grown with a, you know, 100-mile car with 50 kilowatt DC fast charge. I can tell you it wasn't bad. And Kyle and I had some fun with it out on the track. Kyle's a big Mini enthusiast, as he said, and so am I. I had one of the original all-electric Mini Coopers back in 2019 in the pilot program. So I've got, you know, sweet spot in my heart for electric Mini Coopers. And I really love this car. I know it goes against some of the other things that I say about short range EVs that don't charge that quickly, right, if for the U.S. market at least. But this car is a lot of fun to drive. I just wish BMW had done what Fiat did and purpose built it. I think it could have, as good as it is, it could have been a lot better.
Yeah, that's a bit of a disappointment. BMW is like one of those companies that is using these platforms for both internal combustion powered vehicles and electric vehicles, and it's a bit of a compromise. Kyle, super quick, it's not really a track car, right? It's fun on the street, but is it?
No, right, overheats on track, pushes. It's a good 7/10 car, loves to be tossed around the back road, super fun to just blast around the city, and that's what it's meant for. It's really the next step up from my electric smart car. And if you have to take it on a trip somewhere, even though the range is low, like Tom mentioned, it does 50 kilowatts to like 93% or something ridiculous. So the road trip to New Jersey was no problem.
Right. Awesome. Okay. So also another vehicle that was very highly anticipated, actually maybe even the mostly highly anticipated vehicle. And in some respects, it doesn't have the fanfare. Anyway, this year in 2020, the Tesla Model Y debuted, and man, it seems like that was actually a few years ago, but it was actually this year, and it came out a lot sooner than we expected, I believe, too. I thought it was going to come out closer to the end of 2020, and I think it surprised everyone and came out much earlier in the year, maybe about like 6 months earlier. And, you know, production was slow at first, but now it's ramped up, and I'm seeing them here in Tallahassee, Florida. And I imagine you're seeing them everywhere. I'm actually surprised you didn't get one of these, Tom.
Yeah, I had thought about it when I sold my 3. You know, I really bounced back and forth, but it came down to the fact that I don't need the extra utility. It's just my wife and I. We don't have any kids, so I don't need to load the thing up and right, put child seats in the back. And the 3 does everything that this needs to do. So, you know, basically the 3 costs less. It does everything I need it to do. It goes further. It's quicker. I didn't need to get the Y. I don't need that extra space. But for families that do need that space, it's incredible. The utility definitely is worth it. It has a lot more interior volume, a lot even better, higher seating position, better outward vision. Still drives great. I had one of the first ones to do a test drive with and do some range tests earlier in the year back in was it March or April, somewhere around there, right at the beginning of the pandemic. And I was impressed with pretty much everything except the build quality. As usual, you know, when Tesla first releases vehicles, they kind of release them and they're only about 90% built. I had a number of things that we detailed that were, you know, pretty substantial build mistakes on those wiring harnesses hanging out well, the speaker falling off inside the cabin, the rear hatch wouldn't close. It was like bouncing back and forth. But I am happy to say that I've seen some recent ones. A couple friends have taken delivery and they seem nearly perfect. So, you know, I think Tesla, as usual, they take that first year to kind of refine the production. And, you know, most customers don't mind it. So, you know, why not continue doing it that way?
Right. Hey, Kyle, I believe your mom just picked one of these up too. And this is outselling the Model 3, right? Which it's built on the same platform as the Model 3. And it kind of looks like a bloated Model 3.
Well, I think Tom is really silly for not getting this car over a Model 3, because there's no reason to buy a Model 3 over a Model Y. I mean, sure, Tom says he doesn't need the space. Well, it's not like the car is really any bigger, and it's just easier to get in and out of. So, Tom, that's a mistake that you got a 3. I'm sorry. yeah, but my mom just got one, and she had a Standard Plus Model 3, and we did a little video on Out of Spec Motoring about that. And after all the numbers were done, she owned her Model 3 for free, which was an amazing situation. And she wanted a little bit more range and all-wheel drive. They live up north, so she got a Model Y. It's the same exact car. It just sits up a little higher. And, you know, it's interesting. Now, I am kind of over the Model 3 personally to drive all the time. You know, I've done 75,000 miles in a year and 3 months in that car. I'm just, you know, I'm ready for something new. Alyssa's taken my Model 3, so I don't have it anymore. It's her car. She commutes in it. And I've just been bombing around in whatever's in the driveway. And so would I get a Model Y as my next car? Probably not, because we have a 3. But if we didn't, then yes, I would go for this. It's an awesome car. And yeah, it'll be fun to see what's going to come to the garage in 2021. Something interesting. We'll have to wait and see.
Yeah, but will it drift?
Right. I will only get something that drifts.
So I'm wondering if it's too similar to the Model 3. You know, I mean, it's selling well, I guess. I mean, they sell as many vehicles as Tesla sells as many vehicles as it can make, I guess. It has a limited battery supply, or that's what they say. And yeah, well, I'm not sure if it's differentiated enough, you know?
Yeah, some people will get the 3 because they claim it looks better, but honestly, none look that great. And I don't know. I'm just not – I guess I don't see why – you'd get a 3. I mean, other than the Standard Plus for price point, because there isn't a small battery Y. There's a big gap there. You know, you're not gaining space, and you're gaining comfort. You're gaining usable space. You're gaining newer technology. You got all the new stuff in the Y. Same with the 3, I guess, as well. But I don't know. The Y is the way to go, in my opinion. It's the best car Tesla makes, and it is the best all-around electric vehicle ever. But I truly believe that.
Don't you think for the performance driving, you want to be a little bit lower? Isn't it kind of weird to be sitting up that high when you're like, you know?
You're not really sitting that high. You don't notice it. I actually prefer the Y on track, actually. I've had both back-to-back, and the Y is more fun. So
I didn't mention earlier, but now that we're really hammering this and you're hammering me on it, yes. I think it's ugly. I don't like it.
I totally agree. It looks
bloated. There's a couple angles that you can look at where it doesn't look that bad. This picture here, actually, I think is one of the better angles for you to look at it. And I'm going to look at this thing every day, and I don't need the extra space. So I think the 3 looks a lot better. If you're going to compare the Y to, say, the ID.4 and the Mustang Mach-E, they're all kind of in that same category. I think the Y is dead last in appearance by a long margin.
So
for me, it was the utility thing. If I could have said, well, I need the extra space, I'm loading things. Don't forget, I always have a pickup truck. If I need to put big stuff, I have the pickup truck. When I get rid of this, is going to be when I can buy an electric pickup truck, either the Cybertruck or Rivian or something. So I don't need to have something to squeeze in as much space as possible. And, you know, the 3 does it for me. So I studied this. I watched them drive by me. I see them. There's one that parks in a parking lot near I live. I kept driving by looking at it, and I was like, no, I'm not getting that.
But I'm surprised you don't like the Y, but you like the 3, because they're pretty much the same.
Yeah, I don't. We'll put it this way: I like the three. I don't love the three.
I don't think any of them love
the three. But I like it. Yeah. And I just think that you took it and beat it with an ugly stick and came out with the Y. You know, like it's all swollen and like it's all swelled out, disproportioned. You're like, I don't know. I'm not a fan of the Y. You know,
I can't disagree with you there.
Okay, so let's move along. The Polestar 2 came out this year, and that is a Model 3 competitor, but you know, it's like a little higher. It's almost like between the Model 3 and Model Y sort of. I don't know. Kyle, you spent a lot of time with this, or Martin.
If you want the same specs, that's Model Y price. If you want equal specific performance, you're spending Model Y money.
Right. You know, when you see one of these on the road, you're just going to be like, that guy is cool, because they went out of their way to go and get a beautifully designed, very good driving, compact CUV hatchback thing. I personally love Polestar 2. I love it as a car, but I don't love it as an electric car. It drives really well. It's got great interior, good sound system, really good UI with that Google UI. I love the way it looks. It's got big brakes, adjustable Olean suspension. Like, it ticks all of the car boxes for me. But when I look at it as an electric car, it's terribly inefficient, terrible charging curve, relatively expensive for what you get, and really not much real world range. And this is just based off of cars that we've seen in EU, in Europe, that have not performed so well. So we're going to get one to do some more testing with. I have probably could have gotten one by now, but I haven't really pushed them to like go and track one down to do the range test. There doesn't seem to be mass appeal. And also, you can really only buy one if you live on the coasts, because that's where all the service and sales centers will be. You can't bring this to a Volvo dealer for service. So I think the XC40 Recharge, which we're not talking about today because it's next year thing. It's the same exact car. Yeah, same exact car with a dealer network. That might be the one to go for.
Well, again, over here, you can take it to different dealer rules. Here, you take it back to Volvo. So
that's right.
So there will be Polestar spaces, but here the Volvo network is where you will take the car back to. This is really compelling. 78 kilowatt hour battery, 75 odd usable, less than 5 seconds, 4.7 seconds, 0 to 60. Now, it has 151 kilowatt peak speed, but I don't know the charge curve. So Kyle, is that the problem that you have with this car, that it hits it like the Mach-E and then it's like, boom, gone?
Yeah, well, it sometimes doesn't even hit it. It's super affected by cold weather charging. And here in Colorado, I mean, like, my friend was driving XC40 Recharge. He was helping one of the Volvo reps with it. And it was like maybe getting 75 kilowatts on like a 50 degree day, which is just a normal, you know, mild spring day in Colorado. And it's like, come on, this is a northern car. It's a Nordic car. It's got to charge well. You got to have preconditioning en route to the charger. And again, they're over-the-air software updates to over every module. This can all be adjusted, but we haven't seen any changes, and XC40 Recharge isn't looking any better from the charging side.
Okay, well, I guess we'll need to keep our eyes open for this and see if they do fix it. And I can't wait to actually for you to spend some more time with it. So yeah, we just have a better feel, because I hate to just dismiss it, because it's such a beautiful looking car, and it does have some great things, like the interior materials are really nice. The design is nice inside. It's got that Android operating system.
It's amazing. As a car, it is truly one of the best places to be and to be seen in. It gives off the right image. Everything about it's awesome. But it is not a great electric car yet.
EPA range is what? Was it 235?
Yeah, but I mean, who knows how well it'll do in EPA. In real world, I am hearing, you know, based off of Bjorn's tests and everything, it's just not good. It's just inefficient.
Okay. So let's move along. Okay, well, this is kind of a big deal. Volkswagen ID.3. We'll start with it. Now, it's not coming to the U.S., but it is, you know, everywhere else, it looks like, or at least... Well, Europe. Is this, I'm not sure, is this going to China?
Yes.
Yes, okay. So the ID.3 is like the first of the vehicles built on the MEB platform that Volkswagen is going to use for a ton of different vehicles, for Volkswagen, Audi, Seat, Skoda. I mean, I'm sure there's more. And so this was the first one, and it was a little late coming, I believe. depending on who you ask. And it shipped with incomplete software. And it's updated now, I believe. And yeah, there was a lot of issues with the early vehicles, this early vehicle. A lot of owners complaining about their 12-volt batteries going dead. A lot of software issues. But I think a lot of that's being ironed out now. It's almost like the Tesla situation. You know, you get a brand new car, and then it kind of takes a little while to get all the ends brought together. Tom, what do you have any opinions about this?
So, I've obviously never driven right. it. I sat in it at a couple of auto shows, right. and I'm a big fan. I mean, I'm a big fan of the ID3, ID4. We'll talk about the right. ID4 next, yeah. probably. I wish they'd bring this to America. I know we don't buy small cars here in large volumes, but this isn't like one of those tiny, Mini Cooper Fiat 500e vehicles. This is, this is a substantial size hatchback. I think it would do well. The Golfs always seem to sell well here. I still see them running around. I don't know what the recent sales numbers are, but I wish we were getting this here in the U.S. I think this is a good package, but evidently Volkswagen really wants to hitch their wagon to the ID4. That's the vehicle that they want to be their global, high volume. People are moving towards those crossovers more so than the smaller hatchbacks. For not a lot more money, you can get a lot more utility. So I think that's why that they're saying, hey, the ID4 is the vehicle that we're getting. I'm almost surprised that they released both of them like basically at the same time without giving the ID3, some leg room to get its own customer base. I think the ID4 is going to swamp it with sales. I think it's going to cannibalize a lot of sales that would have come from ID3 if they didn't have such a compelling product that was not that much more and offered a lot more utility. The big brother. So I like it, but I don't think it's going to be nearly as successful as ID4.
Yeah, well, the ID3 is like the value play. If you look inside the interior, it's just a little bit more Spartan than the ID4, and obviously smaller, and it's a little more affordable. It comes with three different batteries, up to 340 miles of range, WLTP.
Yep. I could be wrong though, but Martin, I don't really know the pricing. There isn't that much of a difference in the pricing for the ID3 and ID4, is there?
No, I mean not a great deal. So this one, so the big battery one, the ID3, it's called different things here and all over the place. But the ID3 Pro S, which is the big battery, 82 gross, 77 usable, is gonna be £40,000, which is a Model 3 is is 4490. It's a 500 quid over 40 grand. So the big battery, which again is going to get 340 miles. So pricing wise, it's not. If you walk in with cash, it's not that attractive. But with many of these deals, people want to know what the monthly price is, and that's when you can start to get better deals. Most people aren't paying cash for a car like this,
right? Okay, so let's move on to the ID4. The ID4 is pretty new. Not many people have actually had a chance to drive it yet. Kyle, I believe you're one of them.
Yep, both Tom and I drove it. And by the way, I just want to talk about ID3 for a second. I love everything about ID3. It ticks every single box. And I saw one on a Facebook group, I think it was like ID3 owners or something, that was lowered on some really tasteful wheels with the and it would just stance nicely. It wasn't like slammed. And I was like, that is the new Golf R. That is great. Nice. Anyway, ID4 is a freaking awesome machine. This thing ticks every box. I love everything about this car. And Tom and I both agree. We both drove it. We both fell in love with it. There's not one thing to complain about with this car. It ticks every single box. It's not exciting in any particular category, but the pricing is truly insane. You get all-wheel drive, 300 horsepower. Even the rear-wheel drive I thought was fine to get around. I'd want the all-wheel drive, of course, just for the extra power and snow here. We have a ton of snow on the ground right now. But great driver assistance features, 125 kilowatt charging. We do not know the charging curve. That is going to be the big thing about this car. If it doesn't follow VW Group's let's charge deep into the pack, it could kill the whole thing for me. But if it continue, you know, if it sits at 125 to 70, 80%, all about that. And I think it looks incredible. I love the interior. I love the quality. You know, something about driving a German built and screwed together vehicle just feels so nice, even though the materials on paper don't seem that like amazing. You know, it's the, you know, what it's a lot of plastic, but it's all nice. I love everything about this car. Tom, do you agree? I know you and I love, you know, we both, whenever it comes up, we're going crazy over it.
Yeah, I almost wish I needed another car at this point because that's how much I like the ID4. The one thing I will say, I don't love everything about it. I love 99% about it. I didn't like how they implemented the regenerative braking. It's fairly weak. You can't disengage the artificial creep. It's always going to creep forward. Now, I did talk to Volkswagen reps about that. They said, hey, if people complain about this, it's a software adjustment. We could do that. That's very, very easy, and we can change that. And I kind of stressed very strongly, just give us a little box to check that we can say, you know what, don't creep on me. I think that's one of the things that if you've driven electric cars for a long time, many people prefer the one pedal driving where it'll roll to a stop, the vehicle just holds, and it won't move forward until you hit the accelerator. The ID4, it's always going to try to jump forward, you know, and the regenerative braking doesn't allow for true one pedal driving. So everything else I absolutely loved. I think this is going to kill it. If Volkswagen, and this is a big if they properly market this, if they make sure their dealers understand how to sell it, you know, train them properly on how to sell it, I think this can be the vehicle that they're hoping it would be, the vehicle that sells millions over the next few years. Put this up against its competition, and Volkswagen keeps reminding us, and I agree with them, this isn't necessarily a Model Y or a Mustang Mach-E competitor. This is a Honda CR-V, a Toyota RAV4 competitor. This is going after people in legacy brands that sell ICE vehicles and saying, look, this can do everything those vehicles can do. It can do it better, and it can do it cheaper. And people, many people that buy these family crossovers, you know, the economics is a huge, huge reason why they choose one vehicle over another. And if Volkswagen can convey that hey, maybe this costs a little bit more up front, but your overall expense on this vehicle is going to be much less. If they can communicate that, they're going to sell a lot of these.
Right on.
And the fact that it's free 3 years at EA. And also, I've heard
by America.
Yeah, I've heard reports that creep and auto hold settings are in software in ID3 now. I don't know how true that is, but my guess is that will all be solved, all of our concerns about the low speed maneuvering. I love this car. It's definitely on my list. And honestly, I think it's my favorite of the electric crossovers.
Really? Even more than the Mustang?
I think so.
Wow. I think it's definitely the value play. I'm looking forward to driving it. I might even try to encourage my sister to get one. We'll see. So let's move along. I think that's the most important one. We've covered the most important one so far. So in the interest of time and getting back to our families for Christmas celebrations, let's just hit these other ones real quick. And maybe if you hear something that you want to, if you see a car, you want to say something about it, you know, just speak up and interrupt me or whatever. So next we have the Audi e-tron Sportback. Now the Audi e-tron itself, you know, it already came out, but this is the Sportback version. So the rear of the car has a more of a coupe shape, but it's basically the kind of the same, right, Kyle?
It's more expensive. It doesn't look as good, right? And it's not as practical. So why wouldn't you just get the full e-tron? That's my feeling on this car.
Okay. Go full e-tron unless you like, you know, beautiful coupe styling, which some of us appreciate. All right.
No, it's bad.
Okay. The Mazda MX-30. This is an interesting car. I saw this debut in Tokyo. Was it Tokyo? Yeah, it was Tokyo. Like a little over a year ago. And I really liked the way it looked. It's not coming to the US again, one of those. And it's not super long range or anything. And it's not super powerful. And styling, I like the styling, but I don't know, Martin, this is in your neck of the woods. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, again, I'm bugged by cars coming out in 2021 with a 33 kilowatt hour usable battery, 35 gross, 30 usable, that just seem like these companies could do better. Like, we know these companies have got great engineers working for them, and it just bothers me. It's just a bit rubbish in every possible way. It's a combustion car with an electric drivetrain.
Doesn't it have, you can get a range extender too, right?
It's like, you know, real world range on this. I fully charged did a video where they raved about it, and one of those ones where I just couldn't. I was scratching my head afterwards, going like, 105 miles, real world. Like, really inefficient. Oi. The worst butcher job of taking a combustion platform, shoving batteries in places, and then when it comes with a battery so small at like 30 kilowatt hours usable, then like Mazda press release and like the press people just hit you over the head to say, this is because it's an eco car. So we don't believe in big batteries because that's bad for the planet. So we purposefully put a really small battery in because we're saving the planet, which is no one's buying that. It's just the worst.
Then they made it slower to mimic a gas car. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
They said, we intentionally slowed this down so it drives normally.
Yes, it charges at 37 kilowatts DC, maximum peak rate. It's just rubbish, and I wish Mazda had let their engineers go make the car that they could have made, but they didn't. It looks kind of cool. It's got suicide doors. If you like the styling, it's all right. I wouldn't spend a penny of my own money on this.
Well, and so it's so sad because Mazda is so good at building iconic, amazing driving vehicles. And then they just like let this one down. Like, if they're going to make an electric car with a small battery, put it in a Miata, please. I want an electric sports car.
Yeah. Yep.
So to sum this all up, it's like Mazda, Nanishiteru no? Which is like Japanese for what? Are you doing?
What are you doing? What are you doing?
Yeah, I this could have been the EV of the year if it was released in 2012. And you know what I said earlier about like that we're finally getting these legacy automakers to really fully invest in electric cars and put their best foot forward. Just scratch that for Mazda. This is a hatchet job. This thing stinks from start to finish, period.
Let's move on. Mazda, BMW iX3. Okay. This is your territory again. This is not coming to the US. This is a built in China, and I believe it's built on a different... It's not an electric platform. Right, Ooh. Martin?
Is this... Oh, you've confused me now, because the Chinese version is a stretch, and that might be on its own... I don't know now. Oh, now you've confused me. There was going to be a question today that definitely confused me. Look, this is a £60,000 car. If you like your X3s, you may well get in this and love it. It is a very expensive car for what you get. It's not particularly quick, 0-60 in 6.8 seconds. Like I say, for company cars, maybe businesses will, you know, get this for their... You know, for those kind of company car drivers at 60 grand and just look at the monthly cost. But, you know, 80 kilowatt hour pack. And I don't know what the WLTP ranges of this. But, you know, it's okay. But we know there's better stuff coming from BMW because they've now admitted the way they were doing it, which is to have a factory with all sorts of different powertrains coming down the line, and again the whole kind of PR line of this is a genius way of doing it because as more people buy EVs, we'll dial up this one, we'll dial down diesel. Terrible. They've realised that now, and so you know they know that in a couple of years' time they're going to be making pure electric platforms, which is the way it should be done to have the best possible car. Now they've got to get through the next couple of years by telling us, we've got a new plan, but buy the existing cars on our old plan because they're really good. They're not going to make many of these either.
If they just stuck with the i3, it would have been so much better. We would have been in a totally another place.
Ten years ago, they had a lead 10 years ago, and they blew it. And we think they're going to come back in a couple of years when they've got their dedicated platform. If you like X3s, buy this. I wouldn't buy it.
So, Martin, would you? What about if this was the next car on our list here, the Lexus UX 300E? Would you take this over that?
Oh, it's so ugly.
The BMW is kind of ugly. Do you have a shot of the Lexus anywhere there?
Yeah, let's bring this up.
See, it's funny you think the BMW is ugly. I love the way the iX3 looks. Maybe I just like BMW. Yeah. Because it's the last true BMW without the new ugly giant grills.
Yeah, good point. Mm. Well, 196 miles of range. Don't use it all at once. On this.
Just get a Hyundai Kona, please.
Yeah, that's the thing. Just get a Kona.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, this is probably a lot nicer inside than a Kona. And a Kona's got that small back seat. Maybe better
you can
than
enjoy the Kona longer. And the Kona has air conditioned seats and all the driver assistance stuff that I'm sure you have to option on this.
But you don't have a big spindle grill.
That's really bad. I hate the Lexus grill.
Yeah.
That's not the worst application of it. So there's some of the new cars that's just it's like what?
Right. I think their GX is the worst iteration of the spindle giant fish grill thing. I don't know. Can we move to something else?
I guess we don't have a lot to say about that. Yeah. So Neo, we haven't talked about Neo yet this year, and they have the EC6 this year, which was like a mid-size crossover, I believe. Tom, are you familiar with this?
Yeah, I was actually at the introduction last December in China at Neo Day when they introduced the EC6. It's basically their ES6 is a compact SUV, or it's actually a mid-size SUV, and this is the sport back version of it. I loved it. I thought it was beautiful. The interiors are super nice. Neos are positioned as like premium vehicles. So they're more expensive than say XPeng and some of the other Chinese brands, and they have the swappable batteries. It comes with, you can get 100 kilowatt hour battery pack. Between that and the long range, you pretty much do anything you need with it in China. It's very versatile with having battery swap. I loved it. I thought it was great. Didn't get the opportunity to drive it. I drove the ES6, which is the SUV version of this. And that drove really well, super comfortable. Like I said, the interiors on Neos are really comfortable. They probably wouldn't do as well as some of the European SUVs or on the track. They're really dialed in more for comfort and luxury than performance. That's China. You don't drag race cars in China. You know, it's all a little bit of a different culture. I think it's great. I think if the EC6 was available in the US or Europe, that thing would sell. I'm telling you, it's a really, really nice car.
Well, that could happen over the next few years. I know they have international ambitions, but we're getting close to our time. So let's move on real quick. BYD had an interesting vehicle this year, the Han, H-A-N, and it uses the Blade batteries, which I'm not sure if you can tell us anything about those Blade batteries, but here it is on our screen. And the Han, it's like a Model 3 competitor, I guess. Is that fair, Tom?
Yeah, it's like a Model 3 competitor. Like the really, if you take a look up at the top, that picture next to the 20,000, it looks like the XPeng P7. I actually thought that's what it was at first. So it's more of a competitor for that. I think it's really head to head with XPeng's vehicle. I don't know a lot about this. I haven't had a chance to drive it. Like I have Neo's vehicles and XPeng's. But the battery is definitely interesting. And I think it's a vehicle to keep an eye on because BYD definitely, you know, has plans on, you know, bringing their electric vehicles to international market.
Yeah, they already sell buses here.
I have to bring up one thing. Sure. All of these cars are red, and they all have red seats. And this is terrible.
They should have tan seats.
That should just you should not be able to option that in the configurator. And then how many? You know, they just optioned like 50 of them.
Yeah.
Right. Red is a popular color in China, I guess. Okay. So let's move on to the XPeng P7. And you'll notice it does look a lot like the BYD Han as well. And you have driven this, right, Tom?
Yeah. I was actually the first person in North America to drive it back when XPeng had their when they were listed on the New York Stock Exchange, they brought one to the U.S. The first time that they brought one to the U.S., we couldn't drive it on the roads because it wasn't certified. But XPeng rented out MetLife Stadium, where the Giants and Jets play football, and they rented out the parking lot. They set up a big course so I could drive it around. It drove great. We have a couple videos up on Inside EVs. It's probably a little behind Tesla and some of the European brands as far as handling and performance. Right. It has really big Brembo brakes. I was able to get them to lock up on a couple occasions on really hard braking. So, there's some software that they have to work out. The fit and finish was good, not great. I'd kind of put it on Tesla's level, not on the level of some of the legacy brands that seem to have that stuff dialed in a little bit more. But overall value is fantastic. Right. It has the rear-wheel drive long-range version, has the longest range of any EV in China, longer than the Model 3 rear-wheel drive long-range, just by like 5 or 6 miles, but still, it's longer. And it has an all-wheel drive performance version that I drove. I think it drove great. XPeng is priced really aggressively in the Chinese market. It costs less than a comparable Model 3, not quite as fast, but it's fast, but not quite as fast as a Model 3. But like I said, that's not as important in China. You're not drag racing in China. It's simply there's too much congestion. You're probably getting a lot of trouble. I wouldn't know what would happen if you got caught drag racing. But I made sure while I was there I didn't break any laws.
Yeah.
I think this is going to do really well. Now, this is headed to Europe. XPeng just started exporting the G3 compact sedan to Norway, and it's going to be set up in other European markets. This is also going to come to Europe. And I know XPeng has their sights on North America. It's just a matter of when.
Okay. So staying with China real quick, Wuling, in conjunction with GM, put out the Hongguang Mini EV, and I believe it's selling really good. I don't know if you can pull up a picture of that real quick. It's really cool. It's very kind of similar. Yeah, I like it. It's very kind of similar to the next vehicle on our list, the Baojun E300, and also the E300 Plus, a slightly bigger battery, which is also a GM vehicle. And that looks really kind of cool as well. Really funky, extra funky. Yeah, that looks great.
I love that. Yeah. That is the coolest thing ever.
I do. Yeah, this man. I really kind of wish we had these here. Yeah.
I would drive that every day.
Town, I would sell a smart car. Yeah. It'd be great for a big city. Okay, that takes care of all our Chinese vehicles. Now, we just have a few. PSA Group has a trio of vehicles. There's the Citroën EC4, the Peugeot E2008, and the Opel Mokka E. I believe those are all on the same platform and all pretty good. I don't know. Can you sum these up real quick, Martin, in like a sentence?
Yeah. So Peugeot Citroën done a really smart thing. They've got a great little platform. It comes with a 50 kilowatt hour battery. It's got 100 kilowatts of power. It charges at 100 kilowatts DC fast charging. And it's the same for all of their cars. So the Citroëns, the DS, the Peugeot E208, E2008. They've just ordered, one set of parts. And then they're technically all the same, all tuned slightly differently, whether that is a Vauxhall, so an Opel Vauxhall, or a Citroën, a Peugeot, but all of them have those specs. And I think they're all in a really sweet spot because they're all a value sell here over here. They're all, it'll be about the monthly price. It'll be about, the lease or the personal finance. And they're all really competitive. So whilst EVs are still more expensive than combustion cars, I'm not going to try and deny that, they do start to edge when you add in running costs and they start to edge into that territory of, well, this is kind of affordable. If I do a few miles, this is kind of affordable. The insurance is lower, by a few pounds. So, we've a survey out this week that the EV insurance is on average £50 per year cheaper. Not by a lot, but gone are those days where insurers were scratching their heads at EVs and charging. Don't get me wrong. A long range performance Tesla it's still going to be a lot of money. But these kind of cars are absolutely in a sweet spot for family buyers who'll be probably getting these on finance and have a really good set of solid EV specs. They're a 7 out of 10 every day of the week.
I believe they're selling pretty well as well, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And they're making a ton of them. So they're making loads of them, and they're selling really well, and there's lots of variants of them, and they're using this powertrain as well for all of the commercial vehicles. So the panel vans, the little stubby vans, they're using they're using that for, which is fantastic for supply of all the parts and to getting the costs down. Really, really, really solid work, and a bit of an underreported story.
Okay, so the only other vehicle that I have on our list that came out in 2020, and if I've missed anything, you know, let us know in the comments, and you know, we'll be contrite and apologize.
They will anyway.
Because I'm sure we missed something. The only thing on my list now is the Skoda Enyaq iV, which is really the Volkswagen ID4, the more of a value, slightly cheaper version, I believe, that comes out under the Skoda van brand. So if you look at the other brands that didn't, there are no electric Toyotas this year, no electric General Motors, anything, Mercedes, Porsche. Anyway, so I guess that brings us to the show. Tom, thank you all for joining us.
I have to jump in for 1 second.
Sure.
I have to mention, if you could put me up on the widescreen, Martin.
Yeah, definitely.
There's something right behind me here.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm not showing off. Dominic asked me to put it in the screen so everybody could see that I received an early Christmas present. My Tesla Tequila arrived yesterday, and I wanted it in the background so people could check it out. Dominic actually asked me to put it up in there. I'm not just showing off. Look, I've got Tesla Tequila and you don't.
Right. But we don't because it's out of stock, right?
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's the thing. It was only available for like, I think, 2 hours, and then it sold out. Not really. I don't know if they announced yet for certain if they're going to be bringing it back. But when I saw this, I was like, oh, I'd love to get that, but I can't spend $250 on it. My wife was like, get it. That's your Christmas present. Treat yourself. So I ordered it, and it came in time for Christmas. It came yesterday.
And that's made by Nosotros, and it's like a slightly different batch than their usual thing. So it's, you know, it's definitely a premium price. But when you do crack that open, if you do, it should be pretty interesting. I wish I could be there.
I'm still deciding whether or not I'm going to hold it and save it or crack it open and drink it. It'll really depend. If they start selling it again and they start just blasting out tons of them, it doesn't have any type of real collector's value, then I might even do a little shot on the podcast one day in the future. We'll see.
Oh, there we go. There we go. All right. So that brings us to the end of our show. I'd like to thank you all for joining us. If you have any comments about any of the topics on today's show, you can comment on the Inside EVs podcast post, the YouTube comment section, or on the Inside EVs forum podcast thread, where we collect all the episodes of the Inside EVs podcast. Don't forget, you can find and follow our panelists on Twitter. Tom Longley is at Tomolog. Martin Lee is at EV News Daily. Kyle Connor is at Out of Spec. I'm at Dominic_Y. Click subscribe and tap that bell icon for notifications. And we'll see you all next week. Merry Christmas. Ciao.